international, inspirational, and joy magnet.
Hi out there. This is Heather Vickery, and you've tuned in to the Brave Files podcast. I have a question. Have you ever abandoned your dreams to pursue a more comfortable life? Yeah, I get it. Me too. We are going to talk about that today and so much more. But first, I want to give a little love to Malik from Inductor of Healing in Forest Park, Illinois. They are a proud sponsor of this episode of the Brave Files podcast. If you are looking for massage therapy work or chiropractic work, I highly recommend, if you're in the area, that you check out Inductor of Healing. Malik is personally responsible, really, for saving my damn life. Several years ago, he fixed my frozen shoulder, and this past several months, he has worked on debilitating back pain for me and treated me so well. I'm so honored that I get the privilege of being his client and customer. So if you are in the area and you need any service like that, please reach out to Inductor of Healing. All right, so today's episode is with Helen Krug von Nadia, who, just like we talked about earlier, abandoned her dream to pursue a more comfortable life. And then 15 years later, she got a second chance and jumped in with her whole heart. Learning from failure and walking away from a highly successful career at the United Nations, Helen shares her story of resilience and perseverance. And once you see your heart's desire, my darling, please move mountains to achieve it, just like Helen did. I'm pleased to bring you this conversation. Helen was raised in Switzerland and college educated in the United States, and she shares her ups and downs, her lessons, and her passions. But we also discuss her experience in America as a Black woman, while not being a Black American. It's fascinating, and I really, really enjoyed this conversation. Lots and lots to dig into, so let's get to it. You're listening to The Brave Files, where we share stories from people who've stepped out of fear and into bravery in every possible way. What we know for sure is that when we choose bravely, on purpose, we choose bigger, we win bigger, and it's contagious. It's our hope that these stories connect with you and encourage you to embrace bravery in every possible way, day after day. Together, we can build a movement that enriches both our lives and our communities. The Brave Files is brought to you by Vickery & Co., a success and leadership coaching firm dedicated to helping you build a life and a business that you are absolutely in love with. Vickery & Co. offers group programs, membership communities, one-on-one coaching, VIP days, corporate trainings, workshops, keynote speaking, and so much more. Visit vickeryandco.com to get all the details. Hey, folks, what do you do when the life that you've worked really hard to build becomes the life that you no longer want? Well, this week's guest is here to talk about having that same experience and really so many other things. Helen Krug von Nadia has done just that. And somebody who grew up in Switzerland and then attended university at Smith College here in the United States, she returned to Geneva to begin her professional life. And when returning to the U.S. to celebrate her 15th college reunion, decided to take, on the spur of a moment, a weekend trip to New York City. And this is when, would you say you fell in love, Helen? Your life changed.
I feel that I fell in love all over again, and I had this brutal reawakening in a way, because it was driven by theater. So it was.
I didn't even know that. Okay, yes. We have to dig in on that. Yes. I'm such a theater nerd. I love it. All right. So after Helen returned to Geneva, she set some things in motion to make her dreams come true, and she's here to talk about that. And I think you've done so many incredible things. Helen, welcome to the Brave Files.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for the warm welcome. I'm so thrilled to be here. It's great.
Yes, thank you so much. And I have to give a special shout out to our mutual friend, Nick North, who did the introducing, connecting us. So, Nick, we love you. We hope you're listening.
We love you, love you. Big smooch.
Okay. So we had to laugh. Helen, as I was prepping to properly pronounce your name, you said you started with Williams.
That's right. Helen Williams.
I might have kept my name. No offense to your husband, but I might have been like, listen, buddy, this is good. No, but you were born in London, but yes. raised in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Excellent. And what was life like? What was the childhood in Switzerland like?
Do you know, if I could literally start by telling a story, because I think it kind of encompasses Geneva, which is sort of my life. So my parents got divorced when I was about 4 years old, and I moved with my mother to this little tiny little apartment because we were very short on funds. But we would every Friday night watch a televised theater, a show called Au Théâtre Ce Soir, which means at the theater tonight. And it was literally back in the 70s, sort of a little bit black and white. And it was just sort of beautiful comedic theater. And I was obsessed with these shows. Every Friday, I would watch this 90 minutes of theater. And I was thinking, why do I love it so much? I think it's because it sort of brought joy. It was about entertaining others, and it was different storylines, and it was storytelling. And I found that if I think back to sort of my childhood, it was a little bit like, it was a story, but it was also a very complex story with twists and turns. And so I was born in London, my mother's Jamaican, my father's Guyanese. They moved to Switzerland when I was just a month old. And French was my mother tongue. Once they got divorced, I went to a Swiss school. So I don't look anything like the Swiss, but I spent my childhood in Geneva and then ended up going to the international school. But all that to say that I had what I can only describe as a most beautiful, idyllic childhood in Switzerland because I was able to go to the international school. Yeah. And it was just gorgeous. And it's a beautiful place to live.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been. I actually have a daughter named Geneva.
Oh,
that's my daughter's name.
That's a beautiful
one of
name.
My daughter's name.
Well, she needs to go and check it out.
She does. She's named after my grandmother, and I'm not sure how she got the name, but that's so. Anyway, so totally random. But every time I hear that, I think of my darling. Mm. So, what took you to Smith College? I mean, that's a very far away. Like there are a lot of colleges in the world.
I know. Well, as I said, raised by a single parent. And so when it came, I did go to the international school, which meant that we were exposed to the colleges doing their rounds. However, I really had to focus on colleges that were able to provide financial aid to international students. And Smith, by some extraordinary force, did have that program available. And so I'd had a friend from a year above me who'd applied. And, we all had, I guess, fairly good grades. Anyway, we applied to a number of colleges, and Smith was the one. I'd never been outside of Boston, only knew New York. And so I'd never been to women's college, by the way. I just said, I'm doing it. When I got the letter, I mean, how could I not? So that's how I ended up at Smith College, which was an unbelievable experience.
Well, that was my next question, is what was it like? I mean, even though you went to the international school, it had to be just wildly, vastly different
so
from what you were doing.
Yes. Well, one, I was at least a good year older than most, because in the European system, you go up to 13 grades. So I did my baccalaureate, where I think you stop at the SATs. So I was already older. I was already drinking. I was already going out. So there was sort of a level of maturity where clearly I could see, oh dear, some of these women have never sort of left their little hometown. No offense, but I just felt like I'd been in Europe, been interrailing, I've gone to Greece, I've gone all over the place, rucksack.
Yeah.
So there was that disconnect with being at Smith. And there was just so much variety and richness, and I had my own room, and it was all very luxurious. And that was a bit of a culture shock. Right, because I had grown up in a very modest home. But the opportunities were extraordinary in terms of the learning. And that's why I had looked at US colleges and not UK colleges, where you have to decide when you graduate what you want to study. And you don't really have the leeway to switch.
Change your mind.
Right. Whereas I liked the liberal arts approach, where you could create and explore, which kind of links back to sort of theater, right? You explore, you create. And so it was a really good fit for me.
I love that. Did you do theater at Smith?
Yes, I did. I was a theater major.
I was a theater minor.
Oh, I was a theater major, history minor, and I wanted to be an actress. Like that was a thing. I was always into the theatrical pieces from that time when I was watching television to going to Smith College. That was huge on my list. very high.
Did you pursue a career in acting?
I did up until that. So I did actually. I did a lot of theatre while at Smith. And when I moved to New York, I actually moved to New York after Smith because you had a year to be able to stay there with a visa.
Okay.
However, I quickly realized apparently that you also need to have an income to be able to live in New York City.
Which you don't really have as a new actor.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know that I can wait tables for very long. And so that's when I realized I don't have what it takes. Do you know, like the actors who would just work 7 jobs and just do it?
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to be a little bit more comfortable. So I did it for about 9 months, went to I don't know how many auditions, and then realized I just, it's not for me. The big Whoopi Goldberg dream was just not mine. So that was one of the...
It's a tough gig. I mean,
I have so much respect for actors.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too. My sister podcast, Was It Chance? We interview a lot of producers and Tony Award winners and people in performing and acting. And I'm always amazed at just the level of hard work. I have a daughter who wants to be an actress.
Mm.
She's quite talented, but she hasn't quite got that whole work your ass off work ethic bit going.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to take an acting class. She doesn't want to be in the school show. And I was like, you know, people don't become professional actors without doing an awful lot of acting.
Yes. And the grit and the being uncomfortable and the endless auditions. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you must have learned so much from that audition process. Is so humbling and enlightening and learning to get rejected and show up again. Like, what kind of resiliency skills did you gain from that?
Do you know, that's interesting. And I'm trying to think where that came from, because for every audition that I didn't get, I actually, and I don't know if that's just my personality, but it was like, okay, so what did I learn from that? Right. It was always sort of like, what? So what can I take away? I'm crushed. But I didn't necessarily take it personally and didn't think it knocked my acting skills. I understood that I either wasn't right for the part or maybe they just didn't like, you know, the way I looked. But I never took it, which is interesting. I didn't take it personally. And I do find that was in this context. Whereas I think in other contexts, you know, I'm like crushed immediately. But this one, I think back, maybe because you kind of go in there with an actor or facade, it almost felt easier because you could kind of hide behind it. As you asked that question, I'm thinking there was some sort of protective shield around it.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, like you don't like the character, but it's not me. Yeah.
So you wanted to make some money. You want to pay your bills and things.
Mm-hmm.
And is that when you decided to go back to Geneva?
Yeah. So basically I was, you know, it wasn't going to go anywhere and my visa was running out. And so I made my way back to Switzerland via Paris. I lived in Paris for a couple of years doing really boring, tedious admin work, which I hated, and then moved back to Geneva.
Oh, but in Paris, I love Paris.
Paris is fantastic. But I wanted to play. I didn't actually want to work. So I felt like I feel like I left Smith and I was still very immature. I just want to
still play.
Just play. Still play. Still play.
So you went from being the most mature one in the group to
to just tasting what it's like to be, you know, free of rules and stuff. Anyway, I realized when I moved back to Paris that I missed Geneva because I would go back a couple times, you know, every other month or so. And so I moved back. But because I really didn't have sort of the marketable skills, I mean, coming out of college with a degree from Smith is fantastic. In Geneva, it doesn't really, I mean, that's nice, but
They
were like, can you type? And luckily luckily or unluckily, my mother had made me go to, can you believe it, secretarial school, which almost killed me.
Wow.
But I learned how to type.
Yeah.
And that's how I
get paid.
Yeah. And that's how I got into the private sector. So fast forward, so I ended up working for Sotheby's in the jewelry department. So wonderful. Mm. I was the secretary, all very fancy. I was also their model for all of their shows. So I was draped in all the fancy jewelry. Again, playful. That was fun. But then I kept noticing that I didn't want to stay in these sort of admin roles and it just got really boring. And sort of fast forward, I was able to move into HR because I went back to school to get my master's in HR. But life became a little bit bland, right? Switzerland is beautiful. It's safe. There isn't much happening culturally. And I just could just see myself coasting through. I had an apartment and a car and everybody around me was just lovely. And I was bored.
That's so interesting.
I think I was just bored. Yeah.
I'm always fascinated. So we're going to tell your whole story and we're going to get to a little hint that now you're an entrepreneur. There's a whole journey there, folks. Stay with us. But I find the same thing. And entrepreneurs are very much like this, where we sort of crave some action. And I'm always so, this is going to sound judgy, folks. And I really don't mean it judgy, but I'm always so fascinated by the people who are just absolutely content with the day in, day out. And I maybe in some cases admire it. Like, all right, if you are legitimately happy, just riding that wave and not doing anything else. It's fascinating to me because most of the people in my sphere like that high energy, get up and go adventurous approach. And you're like that. So, you know, it's just always so interesting to me how different folks are and how we choose to move through the world. And I guess that's what makes the world go round. Yeah. So you got a little sleepy there, 15-year college reunion.
So I'm just like,
you're probably very excited.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm like, I'm going to Smith. We're going to have a lovely reunion. And so great. We had it done and dusted. And then I went to New York to stay with a dear friend of mine in Manhattan. And I think my heart exploded. That is the only way I can put it. And I can tell you exactly the moment. She works in the movie business and she invited me to go on set to watch them film Without a Trace. And it was 10 p.m. in Times Square. And so I was watching these actors and I was looking at all these, you know, Times Square is the lights and the noise and the action and cut. And it was as though like my heart just catapulted. Like I became alive. It was so bizarre. Like this is where I'm supposed to be. I couldn't explain it.
I love those moments.
Yeah. It was a life-changing moment. I'll never forget. And from that minute, that moment that I had that experience, it's like, that's it. I need to be in New York, come hell or high water.
Yeah.
And so,
those life moments, those unexpected, I kind of call them downloads, where the universe makes it very clear, like, this is your sign in a really big way. What are you going to do with it? Right? Look back at those moments. Now, you went back to,
Geneva
sort of electrified by all of this.
100%.
But you didn't, you know, it's not so easy to just immigrate to the United States. You're not American.
Nope.
And America does not make that an easy process. So what happens? You go back to Geneva. You want to be in New York.
Yes.
What happens?
And I go back to Geneva and I set my sights on Manhattan. I don't care how this happens. And it actually—
the least expensive city in the United States.
And by the way, everyone in Geneva is like, don't do that. Like, you'll never be able to afford it. You can't. Like, the whole like, no, stay where you are. And by the way, most of my friends are in very different fields. So, and they love their lives in Geneva and I love going there. So I set about figuring out how to get there. And it was, this is probably going to sound a bit woo-woo, but I did.
Can I
just give you the tacky things that I did? If you remember at the time, we used to have the Nokia phone that came out, the tiny Nokia phone. Do you remember like the teeny, teeny one with like the pixel screen?
I don't
screen?
Know if our listeners would remember that, but my sister had one. It was the tiny
the
phones
phone.
Went from being super tiny back to being big. And now it's fascinating. Yeah.
I took a photo of the Empire State Building and that was my screensaver. So I would remember every single day that I wanted to live in New York. I also, and this is not a joke, I played New York, New York every single day for 18 months until I moved to New York. That was number two. Like literally every night I'd be like, this is my song, I have to play it. And then I got myself a coach because whilst of course my community, you know, my mother was always like, do what you need to do, you know, live your dream. A lot of my friends, of course, they're kind of living through you and they want you to be safe and okay. And they give you all reasons why you should just stay where you are. And I got a coach, which was just really wonderful to help me sustain the vision and have some accountability. And I was lucky enough to work in an organization. I was working for the World Wildlife Fund for Nature, where we had quite a bit of holiday. So I would take that time to basically travel to New York and then just blast and network anyone that I knew and try and have it organize informational interviews about what was possible. I mean, I was willing to clean shoes. I didn't care. There was no way. It was just, I need to get there. And it took 18 months. And the first job that I got was working for the United Nations, right? Because the United Nations has, you're able to work in, obviously in the US, because they facilitate your visa process.
They sponsor you, yeah.
But I was working full-time on a great job as a recruitment manager. And this was a three-month and 90-day assignment in New York City.
Wow.
To be deployed to Darfur afterwards, because it was in the middle of the Darfur crisis.
Oh my goodness.
So, and I was like, I'm going to do this. And then in those 90 days, I'm going to find another job. Right?
Like, I'm, well, you are not risk adverse.
I'm like, I will be in New York, so I'm going to find another job. Mm-hmm. And my friends are like, just wait. There'll be another job that comes along. Don't take this one. Just wait. It's like,
but you knew.
Hell no. I took it. I left my full-time job. Can you believe it? And
to take a three-month commission in a different country. Yeah.
I went to New York with my little suitcase, my one suitcase, and I hustled and hustled and ended up, because of course there were so many crises, sadly, going on, that I was able to move, because I also speak French, I was able to move to another, what we call another desk, looking after the French-speaking country. So I ended up staying in New York, and then kind of, and as I stayed in the United Nations, in the Department of Peacekeeping, I was kind of, you know, maneuvering myself around, which I know.
I mean, that's pretty cool. Well, the Department of Peacekeeping. Also, I feel like it's a nice tie-in to your degrees because there's a lot in theater, a lot of the skills that we learn in theater, and also with history.
Yes.
I have to imagine you can use that peacekeeping. What did you actually do?
Well, peacekeeping. So I was on the recruitment side, and because my major wasn't in human resources, I was focused on building up the offices, so hiring what they call personnel to actually get the logistics base going. And so that was really my main task. And so I was doing that for Darfur team, and then you'd liaise on other desks to really just help roster people. So it was somewhat repetitive, and I have to say, coming from the private sector, it's a learning curve.
And a lot of red tape, maybe.
A lot of red tape, very bureaucratic. But, you know, it also fits in with my, like, love of learning, which is why I ended up going, again, back to school later to, you know, to get an additional degree.
Now, you were at the UN for some time.
Yes.
Ended up fairly high ranking.
Yeah, I was there for 10 years. I did leave twice. So, you know, people can do a lifelong career, or you can choose to switch from different agencies. And I did more of that. So I, for example, went from working for the United Nations peacekeeping division to then going to work for UNICEF, which focuses on children, and then going to work for UNFPA, which focuses on, you know, women and children, women's rights. So there are many different opportunities within the UN system. It's an extraordinary organization, very complex, but I've made the most unbelievable friends and colleagues, and have exploded my, you know, my learning and just appreciation for the world that we live
in. Yeah, I love that. I've always thought that working for the UN would be such a fascinating, eye-opening, life-changing experience, because the more we can be exposed to people who are different from us, who have different lived experiences than us, the better we all are. And then, okay, so here's where we move into entrepreneurship. We hinted at it. I mean, this was great. You had a career you loved.
Yes.
You had wonderful friends, you were learning like crazy, and you chose to leave that career to work for yourself and become a coach.
Yes. Well, I was already a coach. Yes. I had already,
you were already a coach.
I'd had my coaching certification 10 years prior. So I was already a certified coach. But yes, but this was to
And what type of coach? What kind of coaching work were you doing?
I was doing career and life transition coaching. So I was already involved in that space. Yeah.
Okay. And then you decided to take it. What made you decide to do this full time on your own? Like, why this choice? This was just a few years ago.
Well, it's 3 years ago, and it's another theatrical moment. So as I'm like, oh my gosh, as I'm talking to you, I'm like, oh dear, all these theater themes. I am, as I said, I went back to get my doctorate at 50. And in the first,
congratulations.
Thank you. In the first couple of months, we had a visiting professor have us experience a day in our life. But it was just one of these activities that she wanted us to do. We're in the class on adult learning, blah, blah, blah. And as I was miming my day, I had, again, another one of these, like, how can I spend 8-9 hours in this position, right? Like with your neck cricked, looking at the computer.
Sure. Yeah.
And because I thought back to how much I love being outdoors, you know, acting, running, all of these things that are physical. And again, in this moment, so I was still at the UN, but I was doing my degree part-time. And I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be within a confined structure. I need to be free and do this on my own.
Just another really, big yeah. download, right?
Like it was, this yeah. other-
Yeah.
Just a huge download. It was like the information it was telling you was, you know, you can be more effective doing this kind of work, right? So being a coach, speaker, trainer, you have ample to share from your experience. But at a certain point within the UN system, it becomes very, you know, admin heavy. I mean, the higher up you go, of course, sure. you are under the bulk and the weight of the infrastructure. So I was like, that's it. And I worked towards that during my four years with my fellow peers. So they know when I was like, I'm going to do this. Here is the vision piece. And they're like, Helen, you're going to do it.
And you do. You're a follow-thrower. I love that.
I'm a follow-through. Yeah.
And so now you sort of, your niche is supporting international women who are kind of doing what you've done.
Absolutely.
Right? Like creating, building new careers. Yeah. Yeah, tell us about that.
So I think my niche is really around supporting women in their career success and career transitions. And specifically, I find that I'm drawn to international women because that's just the life that I have led and the people that sure. I've been in interactions with, but also people within organizations that also perhaps are looking to make a shift, not necessarily to entrepreneurship, but just to find more fulfillment. Because as part of my research, what I was noticing was that even though we have more opportunities, right, there's this fulfillment gap. So the opportunity gap was my mother's generation. Now we have this fulfillment gap where people are working and they have all the perks and they're still miserable. And so I was very curious to look at that and really support women to find, I talk about joy magnet, like to find more joy.
Yeah, I love that. Well, because we still are steeped in this notion that we must sacrifice for everyone else, that we must do whatever so other people are pleased or getting their needs met. And 100%. So much of my work aligns with that. I think that's why Nick introduced us, because it's so brave to say, I'm going to put myself and my dreams and my desires first. And that's going to be better for everyone else. It's not worse. It's better.
Yes. 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 The impact piece, like, but the impact of my doing this, you know, has a ripple effect on all the other people around me as well.
Yeah. How has that transition been for you?
It was rocky, to say the least.
I appreciate that honesty.
Oh, yeah. You know, because I'm like, I'm just going to go out there and, you know, do this thing. So I would say what made it easy was that we, at least I now have a green card. So I was able to literally open up a business here. The rocky bit was I didn't really have a business plan. And I think it's one of those things, you know, when you decide to become an entrepreneur and you just go for it. And I was, and I was using the same thing that I did when I'd followed my husband to Europe, which was, I'm just going to take on consultancies. But then I'm almost back to working in-house. If I'm just consulting, I'm not creating anything. I'm not designing programs. You know, I like to do coaching workshops. So that was really hard. And it was lonely.
It was lonely.
Because you're leaving, imagine, like I was leaving my whole UN group and the UN is very connected. So I had this whole lovely group of people. And then I'm like, I have no idea who entrepreneurs are. I don't know what that looks like. So that was hard. Financially, sort of making, you know, no money the first year was a bit like, oops, or not making what I had considered to be ample money.
Right.
Failing. I launched this amazing, what I thought was an amazing retreat for women in South Africa. Don't ask me why. And I got zero participants, but it was, you know, I'd already set it all up.
Hard
so
moments.
All these cringy things. And now, 2 years in, I can look back and say, wow, how much I've learned from that. But it was hard because you just kind of fumble through it.
So much of entrepreneurship is that.
I mean, I did. Sorry. Maybe not everybody does. Yeah.
No, I think most people, if they're honest, they do. And some people, like, you know, sure, you could start with a business plan and all of that is great. I kind of subscribe to the done is better than perfect, or you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. Like, just get in and muck around and tweak and figure it out, which it sounds like that's your approach as well. And that's why with my Brave method, the three R's, reassessment, reframing, resilience, it talks just about what you just said, is when you look back at the last couple of years, you know, we want to pause and we want to reflect, wait, what worked? What did I learn? What's different? If we don't pause to celebrate and reflect and build off of that, we don't give ourselves the credit for all of the growth and all of the change. And it's so beautiful to be able to support people like that. What would you say has been the greatest unexpected surprise?
Oh, the greatest. Do you know, and I'm going to try not get teary, but he's going to make me teary. I cannot believe the amount of support that I've gotten.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have to imagine with the incredible network that you've cultivated your entire adult life, that people want to support you. They want to refer you. They know you're the real deal, right? And
yes. And I have found that people actually will go out of their way. The things that I have been given access to, I'm just mind blown. And absolutely, I know that I'm hoping that I have a generous spirit and heart, and that I can also, that I do the same. But it's just been unbelievable. And I have so appreciated that. That has been my greatest, really greatest surprise, just how much. And from all sorts of places, right? And I always talk about women because I'm in the women's space, but oh my goodness, all the gentlemen who are like, I'm right here. Whenever you need me, please let me help you.
I love that. It's such a nice reminder that we are not required to do this alone. And when we lean in on and for and with other people, but from a space of, it's not neediness, it's support, asking for support and asking. There's such a beautiful reciprocal experience there of people. We love to help, right? We want to help others. People want to help us. We feel loved. It just brings goodness. It's this circle of goodness.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now I have a really, we talked briefly about this in our pre-interview. And I want to share it because I think it's fascinating and it's important for people to hear. You are a Black woman in America. You are not a Black American. And I'm curious to know that what that experience is like here for you. It's, you know, racism is not unique to the United States. However, United States is the only nation built on it. So, I mean, to laugh, I'm horrified.
I'm
so I'd be so curious to know what your experience as a Black woman in America is like, if you'd be willing to share that.
Of course, of course. And we had touched on it, and I know, and I'm absolutely happy to share. So yes, a Black woman, Jamaican Guyanese, born in London, raised in Switzerland. So I have a British accent and I am a French speaker. And coming to the US with that as my identity has made my experience, I know, very different than Black Americans. And so I think we talked about this, but I don't think, and this is likely, I don't know, I'm just gonna say what's on my mind is that no one can own the Black experience. So I have had a radically different experience than some of my Black American friends. I went to an all-white school where I was, you know, celebrated. Like, it wasn't about race, it was more about sort of, country. Oh, you're from this country, you're from that country. So the international school was always like, oh, what country are you from? So from a young age, the way that I view, the lens through which I view the world has been that of the international sphere.
Yes.
And so,
which is lovely.
Which is lovely. And yes, I've had some racist incidents, very few. I can literally count them on one hand, which is unbelievable, that have happened to me in my entire life, pretty much. I found being in the US quite hard recently because I don't always agree with some of the views of the Black American community. Agree. I just haven't lived it that way.
I haven't experienced it.
So I try to just speak from my experience.
Yeah.
You know, I'm married to a white German gentleman. And as an interracial couple, our neighbors asked us one day, sort of, you know, what is that like, you know, being an interracial couple? And we literally looked at each other and we were like, what are you talking about? Like, it's not something that we have, thankfully, I will say, had to live. But it is difficult. And I know that I don't, I've noticed, again, this is going to sound, come across wrong, but I'm just going to say it. I've noticed that when I've had support, it has primarily come from people from my circle, not from, you know, other Black women, whether it's because I don't know that many, but I don't feel as though we connect as strongly. And I'm likely also partly not to blame, but I don't know that we've had these rich interactions, and I'd love to have that. It's just strange. Yeah. And I don't know where that comes from.
If you'd want to, it's valid to say, I mean, I think it's an interesting, it's just a really interesting conversation. It's certainly valid to say that you haven't had the same lived experience. You haven't been raised and steeped in all of this.
No.
And also we show up in the world based on where we've been in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if that isn't, I mean, I said this before, and I know this is true. So much of what this country is built on keeping Black Americans down.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Lots of proof. Everyone should read the 1619 Project. You know, like it's really important. I couldn't underplay that enough, but we do get conditioned to experience certain things just like racist folks are conditioned to make assumptions, you know, all of 100%. These things. So you didn't show up with that concern. It doesn't mean that you don't, I'm not hearing that you don't have sympathy or empathy,
you don't believe
these Black folks sharing their experience, because that's, I think, the lesson is that we need to learn that we all have different experiences, just like you said, and we need to believe people when they share their experience with us, instead of just assuming that our experience is the only experience that's true.
Correct. I will say so, and I'm thinking about this now as you talk, because and I love how you phrase that. The thing that I have noticed that is different about me now that I'm kind of ticked off about, because I had the naive lens before, which I quite liked. I'm a woman in New York.
When
I go running in the mornings, and I usually go around 5:30, so it's dark in Manhattan. And if I go running and I see someone, you know, like a white person, I'm going to be very honest, I will move very far away, because my immediate reaction is they're going to get like nervous. I would have never, ever considered this years back. Never. And it's probably, it's fascinating because this is what's starting to happen, what starts seeping in, because I've been in New York for so long and I see, we hear these stories and how people react.
Yeah.
And I think, wow, that's so unbelievable that for me, from coming from Switzerland.
Sure. You know, Switzerland of all places.
Switzerland.
But racial profiling is a real thing.
Yeah, it is.
And
I did not grow up with it.
I mean, even just as a woman, not even just as a Black woman, but as a woman running alone in New York in the dark.
Yeah, well, I'm scared.
You have to protect yourself.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm scared too, actually.
I mean, I can only imagine, because these things are true. I mean, this from the Me Too movement, you know, all of the things that came up, I hadn't intended to go down this route. We'll be really quick with it, but you know, the number of men that were shot, that nearly all women walk with their keys in their fingers pointing out in case they need to go. I mean, being followed or being verbally catcalled or attacked, it's so common. And so we have to keep ourselves safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, that's a whole other podcast interview.
I know.
But it's fascinating. But we change when we have to. We adapt for good or bad to keep ourselves safe.
Yeah. And so, you know, I would say I can't see myself living any other place than the US, despite some pretty horrendous years that we've had.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I remain like this is, and I go home because that's where I know, like home being Switzerland. And that gives me perspective, my perspective and the perspective that I have with other friends of mine. And when we have these conversations about that, and I just really try to be mindful as having led an international life of these different perspectives where I, which are all valid.
Mindfulness. Mm-hmm. They are all valid.
All valid. It's just,
that's what's so important. Well, you've done so many incredible things. The word hustle annoys me because I think people misconstrued what it's supposed to be, but you've got a lot of drive and a lot of belief. Mm-hmm. I think you and I are alike in this way. I also grew up, I loved the way you said this, with lack of funds until I was a little bit older and
low
then that
income.
Shifted.
But
I have personally, it always works out. I don't have a scarcity mindset, even when I'm not sure where the next paycheck is coming from or in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is all going to be fine. I'm going to show up. I'm going to do the work. And I think you're very similar. So there's lots to celebrate there. What are your favorite ways to celebrate?
Ooh, well, I feel like I'm always celebrating, often celebrating, as an optimist. It's very simple. It's friendships. I mean, there's no other place I'd rather be with friendships. I think I get that from my mother, which is, you know, I think one of the reasons behind this whole drive that you mentioned. I mean, she was always just, whatever you choose to do, go do. You know, I know
love
you can
that.
Do it, so
love
just
that, Mom.
Do. No judgment, just do it because you chose it. So just do it. And I just remember her being very sort of celebratory growing up. Like she was just upbeat. She is, just
that's
upbeat
fantastic.
And positive. And so for me, it's about sharing that with others. Friends.
I love that.
Family. Yeah.
I think sharing the things that are going well
is
such a wonderful way to celebrate. And again, it brings in community. Mm-hmm. It brings people together. Mm-hmm. Just lots and lots of love there. That's beautiful. Helen, what is your favorite charitable organization to support?
So mine is one called Give Directly, which I don't know, you may or may not have heard of, but Give Directly gives directly to, I know it sounds tacky, but gives directly to people. They're focused on Africa because their belief is that people know best how to spend their the money that they need on what they need. And so that is their primary focus. And it was founded by someone that we know and care deeply about and big fan of that organization.
That.
Yeah.
And I think it's incredible to say people know best how to take care of what they need instead of saying, oh, you folks in this community, you need this. We're going to raise money for you to have this. Giving people money and letting them choose. Yeah. That's beautiful.
And
they
focus on East Africa and it's a research-based organization. So that's how they manage to figure out like what people want to spend their money on as opposed to them deciding for everyone else.
I love that. So they'll be our charitable organization of the week. You guys go and check them out. We'll give them some love and shout out on social media, but listeners,
fantastic. You know
the drill. Go and learn what you can and support in whatever way you can. Helen, will you share with folks how they can connect with you, where they can follow you or learn more about you?
Thank you. So you can find me on Instagram at with_Helen_NYC. You can find me on LinkedIn under my long name or also on our website with-Helen.com.
I love that. I love it. With your long name. It's beautiful. We'll put links to all of that in the show notes so folks can find you easily. Would you share your three words with us one last time?
Oh my goodness. International, inspirational, joy magnet.
Yeah. I love them. Helen asked me if it was okay to do a pseudo word. I'm like, yeah, I love hyphenated words. I'm all about getting out of the box, folks. So, and you are, I mean, obviously international, we get that. You are so inspirational. I just love your sort of no nonsense approach to, we'll just figure that out.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Well, we'll just do that. I see this. You receive your woo-woo download signs and go, okay, well, let me just figure it out. And
one life.
I hope, I'm sure it's contagious to everyone else. It's just inspirational and beautiful. And I do think you are a joy magnet. Very calm, peaceful, smiley, happy joy magnet. And it's been such a joy getting to know you a little bit, Helen. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. It was so enjoyable to have this conversation.
It was a lot of fun. Folks, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I always love to talk to somebody who's just got this nice, chill, peaceful, high energy vibe that's, you know, very calm. I hope you enjoyed it. I know that I did. I want to hear your feedback. You can find me and the Brave Files podcast on Instagram at the Brave Files podcast. Follow, send a DM. Let me know what you think. If you have somebody you want to recommend to be a guest, reach out and let me know. And be sure to follow us on Good Pods or anywhere you stream podcasts. And if you can rate and review, do that for me. Not only does it help other folks find the show, it just makes me feel good. I'm just being honest. I love to feel good and I'll celebrate it with you. I would appreciate it. We will be back next week with a brand new episode of the Brave Files podcast. This is Heather Vickery reminding you today and every day to go out and choose bravely. Bye now. You've been listening to The Brave Files, stories of people living courageously. Visit us at thebravefilespodcast.com to learn more about the show, find our show notes, and access full episode transcripts. And we'd love to know what you think of the show. We invite you to connect with us via Instagram and send a DM. You'll find us at The Brave Files Podcast on Instagram. Our music was created and produced in a custom collaboration with Matt Lewis from ML Creative Consulting, a boutique firm dedicated to helping clients identify their unique sound and amplify their brand with custom-delivered soundtracks. Special thanks to everyone on Team Brave, from our audio engineer to our producers, associate producers, copy editors, writers, and support team. The show wouldn't exist without them, and we are eternally grateful. I'm your host and executive producer, Heather Vickery. Thanks for tuning in.